Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. My name is Ibrahim Sani. In the studio right now, we have Thomas Sal, the co-founder of Gobi Partners. If you don't know anything about Gobi, think about Taqwa Tech. They have been around in Malaysia for quite some time now, and they are supporting some startups that are forcing through the market that brings about some Taqwa solutions. Of course, Thomas started Gobi Partners back in 2002. Gobi is a regional platform that supports entrepreneurs from early to growth stages and has expanded to 15 locations across Asia, but they're doubling down in Malaysia. Thomas, thanks for coming over. We've had quite a bit of touch and go kind of meetups through forums and stuff like that, but this is the first time I'm having you on the show and I'm very excited to have you on. One of the key things that we need to deep dive is on why you would jump into Southeast Asia, particularly focusing some of your efforts here in Malaysia. Why Kuala Lumpur and not some other place?
Well, first of all, Ibrahim, I'm so glad I finally got to make it onto your show.
I know, it's amazing, right? Yeah.
We're finally done something to be able to get on.
So I know,
really
it's amazing,
glad.
Right? But we've been like, I think I could have sworn we've been on a few forums together.
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
But of course, it's about time that we really deep dive into some of the businesses that you guys are backing
on. No, absolutely.
On.
I'd love to share that with your audience. Yeah.
Why the geography? Why Malaysia?
You know, as you know, Gobi, we started off in China, back in Shanghai, 2002. So we're celebrating our 20th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's how long we've been around.
Congratulations.
And I think we came out first broadly Southeast Asia, and then I'll talk about Malaysia, is we came out to Southeast Asia because back in 2010, we noticed that our Chinese startups were having an easier time expanding into Southeast Asia rather than the U.S. or Europe.
Okay.
With very little marketing. And we said, you know, Gobi, we're very data-driven. We said, hey, there's something going on. You know, we better take a look at this. And so actually in 2010, we opened up our first international office in Singapore. Okay. So I think we're one of the first China-based VCs that went abroad. In Chinese, it's called Zhuhai. We're one of the first. As we saw what was going on in kind of greater Southeast Asia, remember, at the time, 2010, everybody from Southeast Asia wanted to invest into China.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, nobody believed in the Southeast Asian tech ecosystem. And we said we should be doing more here. Because I think at Gobi, we always believe in serving underserved markets, leveling the playing field, giving every entrepreneur a chance to be part of this bigger global problem-solving ecosystem. And as we saw the data, we said, hey, something going on in Southeast Asia. And then in 2015, again, we doubled down. I moved my entire family from Shanghai. We relocated to Kuala Lumpur, right? And that's when we came up with the strategy. Most of my friends at that point were trying to connect China with the US. Makes a lot of sense. The two biggest markets in the world. They were doing east to west. And I think they were doing a great job. Gobi decided to go north to south. We wanted to connect Northeast Asia with Southeast Asia. And of course, as a VC, we needed to come up with a catchy term, and our team came up with Crouching Panda, Hidden Tapir, north to south. And at the time, everybody thought we were a little bit...
ambitious or
crazy,
foolhardy?
Yes, a little bit ahead of the curve, if they were nice, a little crazy if they were not nice. They thought, why would you do that? Southeast Asia is so far away. And then recently, I was just in Singapore. There were six conferences with the F1. The whole world is looking at Southeast Asia, right? So it's amazing how if you look ahead, you see the trends coming, and now it really is, it's not only Southeast Asia's time, it's Malaysia's time.
Yeah. And of course, why Taqwa Tech? After the whole geography conversation, I think deep diving into an area where not many Chinese VCs are thinking about. Is that one of the areas that, one of the reasons why you went into Taqwa Tech?
Well, absolutely. And I think, again, our kind of investment framework around Taqwa Tech probably could only happen because we located our headquarters in Kuala Lumpur, right? So I think, Ibrahim, you were asking, so within all the great countries in Southeast Asia, why did we decide to put our HQ in Malaysia? Because I think many people have asked, hey, why not Singapore? Hey, Tom, why aren't you in Singapore? Why are you in KL? Right? And I think when we go back to Gobi's history, again, we were one of the first VCs to set up in Shanghai when everybody was in Beijing, right? And I think, again, we saw an opportunity here in Malaysia when everybody maybe in other cities in Southeast Asia. And the reason is quite simple. I think Malaysia, and I've said this before, is a super connector.
Okay.
And what do I mean by that? if you locate in Malaysia, and this is going to tie back into Taqwa Tech, is you can access five of the most exciting trends in Southeast Asia.
So and
even the world. The first one is, right, from Malaysia, given the cultural, religious similarities, you can use Malaysia as a base into Indonesia.
Okay. Right? So Indonesia is one of the
Indonesia,
five trends.
Right? Two, Malaysia is very diverse. You know, great Malaysian Indian community. From Malaysia, you can, you know, access India, right? Malaysia, again, the beauty of Malaysia is diversity. Very strong, robust Malaysian Chinese community, right? The Malaysian Chinese speak multiple languages.
Mm.
You can use Malaysia as a hub back into Greater China. Malaysia used to be part of the British Commonwealth, right? People speak fantastic English, you know, British kind of the training system, common law. Through Malaysia, you can access the West, Europe, the United States, North America. And finally, because Malaysia, right, is connected to this larger global digital Muslim digital economy, you can access the whole entire Taqwa Tech. That's five, right?
That's five, but I want to talk about what has been the returns following these trends. You've been in the game for quite some time. I suppose you can see what works and what doesn't work. It's no longer hypothetical. You know what works. Maybe you can share with us what doesn't work as well.
Oh, yeah, sure. So sorry. Let's look at, yeah, again, we're early stage VC. We take a long-term view. And in this market, when the markets are a little wobbly, you really figure out that a lot of people say they're long-term until they're not.
Yeah, exactly. Investors. Absolutely.
So
yeah.
We are long-term. And when you look at the longer-term potential for Taqwa Tech, it's probably the most exciting opportunity I've seen since I went into China in 2002, when we looked at the China market. China market, 1.4 billion people, right? You look at Taqwa Tech, we're talking 2 billion consumers, Muslim consumers, digital consumers, roughly similar behaviors, buying patterns, and this is a big opportunity. It's also one of the fastest growing demographics on the planet, and it's very young. And again, we're at the beginning of the adoption cycle on the technology cycle for the larger Taqwa Tech community, and this is what excites us, right? So now what is working is we're still at a very nascent stage because, again, predominantly, you know, Muslim entrepreneurs have been underinvested in. Because when you think, you know, what a classic entrepreneur is supposed to look like, and again, VCs around the world, we have our own biases, and that's unfortunate, right? Muslim entrepreneurs have been underfunded. So Gobi, we want to go out there and make sure, you know, the best ones, right, are getting that opportunity. And a lot of them are not, right? So that's why we went into, you know, we went into Malaysia, we're in Indonesia, and we're now even in Pakistan. You know, we're the biggest VC investor in Pakistan. So we're looking at these opportunities, and what's working for us, we're an investor in a company called Umrami. Right? Umrami is one of the largest OTAs to serve pilgrims ready to perform Umrah. Right? It's just like you booking on booking.com or Trip. Right? Now you can do it on Umrami.com. You can book your package and go visit the holy sites. Right? I think that's a great example where you're using kind of the technology and applying it to a Taqwa Tech sector. The other one, again, we haven't even announced it yet. I'm giving you this special exclusive.
Fantastic.
We're about to go into a company called Durio, right? Sinan, again, he's created great Muslim content for children, right? And this is a huge market, right? So many people love, you know, all the content from Hollywood or from Hong Kong. But again, it's not just, you know, people have demands other than that. And when I looked at what Durio is doing, value-driven type of content for children, this is exactly what the market's missing.
Okay, we're going to pause on that because I'm going to deep dive on Duolingo even further. But
fantastic.
We'll be right back after these messages. Okay. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me in the studio Thomas Sao of Gobi Partners. Now let's talk more about Duryo. If you don't know what Duryo is, these are the producers of Omar and Hana, the Islamic cartoons. They have garnered over 3 billion views and 6 million subscribers on YouTube. They are broadcasted over 25 countries. My own children watch Omar and Hana. And ironically enough, my children are named Omar and Hana.
Well, there you go.
You can't make this stuff up, right? They are like my second boy is my second kid is Omar. My eldest is Hana. But where's the money in terms of content? People don't normally see content creators as scalable unless you own the platform. Say, for instance, like YouTube or TikTok, stuff like that. Where do you see the exponential growth is going to come from a content producer like Duryo?
Well, I think it's fantastic. Without saying too much, because I don't want to steal the thunder from Sinan.
Come on. The beans.
Look, I think, again, Sinan, again, and that's what we're seeing in Malaysia, are entrepreneurs are on their second, third startup.
Yeah.
Right? So Sinan, I think, has learned a lot. He's gone through, again, some challenging periods and has come up and done fantastic things. He's had tremendous success. Mm-hmm. He's also faced challenges. He's now got this startup, and you're exactly right. Scalability is always an issue, and that's why I think Duryo, without saying too much more, is also not only doing content, but getting into the platform, right? As kind of a global distribution. Again, not too ambitious, selected markets in the beginning, but as a content platform to attract all those amazing content creators who are interested in creating this type of Taqwa Tech content, right? For an audience that's starving for it. And you're absolutely right. Yes.
Okay. Let's go back to Umrami.
Again, yes.
The OTA platform. Again, we're talking about scalability prospects of it. Where is the tech? Where is the growth prospect? So I'm just trying to see how you're banking or selecting your portfolio companies here.
Well, again, we put all our entrepreneurs through the most rigorous selection, right? Mm-hmm. So when we're evaluating, or in our industry, we call it comping, which is short for comparing. The entrepreneurs we're seeing in the Taqwa Tech space, we're comping them against the best entrepreneurs I've seen in Silicon Valley, the ones that I've seen in China, in the Greater Bay Area, all around the region. And we're comping them against that. And only if they can meet that, this rigorous selection, do we decide to invest into them, right?
Okay.
So when you look at an Umrami, what did we like about it? Gobi has been a very active investor in the travel space, and we've had some success. Right. When we looked at it, they showed the same type of growth characteristics. And most importantly, the team is fantastic. Right. Again, they have a team around the world, but primarily focused in kind of the Middle East. The team is very experienced, built out great relationships with stakeholders in the ecosystem, and rolled out a technology platform that is number one right now for the Umrah market. They have opportunities now to expand into the Hajj, right, travel, but also using the Gulf. You know, places like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, fantastic travel opportunities, but it's always been kind of closed. And now the government wants to promote the Kingdom, right, as a travel destination. Incredible sites, diving, nature, wilderness, and it's never been seen before.
Yeah, the issue, of course, is the global macroeconomic conditions are very poor. In fact, in a forum that I attended, MDV was hosted by MDV a few weeks ago.
Yes, of course,
we're talking about the forum that I specifically moderated was called the Winter in VC or Winter Investment Opportunities in VC.
Yeah.
Is that something that resonates with you as well? Are you looking at a winter situation here?
It does and it doesn't, right? Because Ibrahim, like, I think you can tell I've got enough gray hairs. I've lived through like 5 of these winters. The world is falling. The sky is falling. It's already happened 5 times, right? We lived through the 97 Asian financial crisis.
Yeah.
Gobi was set up in 2002. The next year we hit SARS, right? We almost folded then, right? After that was the 08-09. Great, what, I don't even forget what they call it. Great financial crisis the recession, right? That's already 3. And then, of course, what happened? We hit the pandemic, right? And so each time, and now, right? We just came out of the pandemic, and now we're in this other. That's 5 already. Each time, so yes, it's very painful for families out there. So we all understand that. But, right? These things always move in cycles. So what we've learned is, just like 2 years ago, things weren't as great as everybody thought. and things are very challenging, but again, we're going to come through it. We're going to make it through because that's how the market works. As an early stage VC, we're experienced enough. We know that in this period right now, when it's really tough, some of the great companies, some of the greatest companies are going to come out of this time period.
Does this mean that you're going to improve on your due diligence, selecting companies with a little bit more, I guess, selectiveness in terms of?
Not really. We've always been selective. Our process, you know, it may change a bit, but again, the processes that we've gotten through 2 decades, right, of rigorous kind of refinement, we're going to still use that. Again, we operate, because remember, we're investing in companies today that are going to bear fruit maybe 5, 7, 10 years later.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
How about the conversation with you and your LPs, or Gobi Partners and their LPs? How do you feel that conversation is looking like these days compared to previous?
Well, it's a lot tougher, getting a lot more questions. But again, that's why you have to be aligned. Our strategy, we explain very clearly. We have a very supportive group of LPs, many of them in Malaysia, and I thank you. Mm. But they understand what we're trying to do, right? You know, there's an old saying in our business, when's the best time to invest into a unicorn? Mm.
So what's the answer?
10 years ago.
All right.
Right? And when's the second best time to invest into a unicorn?
Right now.
So that's, look, I know it's challenging and as volatile as the markets are right now. What we're doing right now, the early stage venture capitalists, we're investing for the future. Mm. And it gets hard when it's not clear. The North Star is not there. It's a stormy weather. But, you know, keeping your eye on the end goal, the North Star, you know, we're investing for the long term. We're looking at innovation, things that are really going to make an impact. Mm. And that takes time. But we cannot stop investing.
Fantastic. One more short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more about Gobi and sustainability. That's coming up after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me the co-founder and partner of Gobi Partners, the VC that is focusing a little bit more on Taqwa Tech. They have been in this country for quite a bit. And of course, Thomas, sustainability is no longer a trend, a passé kind of thing. It is baked into business models and has to be so. In fact, I've had enough conversations in terms of how businesses are more profitable and has the longevity to their name if they focus more on building a business model based on sustainability. But we're talking about startups who might have to bootstrap, who might have to kick down a few tables and, you know, be a little bit more rough in terms of how they capture the market. How do you feel on issues when it comes to startups growing their business, trying to find the product market fit, trying to grow their user base, but at the same time, you know, thinking about sustainability and ESG and all the other stuff in between? Do you feel that this is something that is even adding a little bit more burden to how they grow their businesses?
No, I don't. Because, at Gobi, we're looking forward to the day. And at Gobi, again, we're a signatory to the UN Global Compact, so the best international standards around ESG. Mm. And what I can say is we look forward and we foresee a world one day where right now, I mean, nobody brags that you're doing financial DD or legal DD or HR. It's expected.
Yeah.
And we're moving towards the day where ESG DD is just going to be normal. It's going to be something you just put into your process. It's a normal part of the process. Mm. We're right now at that kind of early phase, that adoption period, where it's kind of novel and people are still kind of talking about it. Mm. But I foresee the day where, I mean, the really question is going to be like, it's going to be weird if you don't have it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So I think that's what's going to happen.
But will this drive cost up? Will this slow down processes? You know, that kind of thing?
It may, of course, right? But even now, right, when we do kind of, you know, the background checks, these are things you have to do. And I think ESG is going to be baked into that. Now, some of the costs you're talking about, I think what governments can do is level that. For example, we're in a lot of food delivery or e-commerce companies that operate in the packaging space. And here's where I think there's an example, right? Plastic, unfortunately, is less expensive.
Okay.
A lot of our companies want to move into more environmentally friendly, biodegradable packaging.
Okay.
That does cost more. So as much as they want to use that and adopt it across everywhere, there are companies who are still using plastic. So that's where I think, again, if we as a community, the stakeholders, can come in, and that's where regulations, and that's what I love about Malaysia banning single-use plastics. Because once you can move towards that, nobody has an advantage of using cheaper, more environmentally destructive packaging, then everybody has to, and that will cause the innovation. Nobody has a cost advantage. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
I think that is what's
if everybody
needed.
Is doing it, therefore nobody has a competitive advantage.
Exactly, exactly.
Or competitive cost.
If everybody's doing ESG just compliance.
Like, just like everybody's doing financial diligence.
DDD? Yeah. Why is that an extra, right, exactly right.
Okay,
exactly.
All right. Let's talk about the two or three trends that you see is going to move forward. Let's not ignore the fact that the global economy is facing a very, very rough headwind. We're looking at economies like the UK and China because of the COVID slowdown, and of course the US and the geopolitical aspect of many of these countries, Malaysia included. Where do you see opportunities lie, and perhaps some of the two or three themes that you think is important to discuss for next year?
So I'll break it down into a couple. First, let's talk about geographies, and then we can talk about specific sectors.
Okay.
How's that?
That's good.
So I think within, I think, you know, right now, a lot of people been, you know, right now, I think China, a lot of negative headlines. Everybody thinks they've been kind of, you know, they're on the mat, kind of knocked out, right? But let me just say this. I think, yes, there have been things going on. We're at an unprecedented time. Mm. We've got the leadership transition, right? I call it the three C's. Right, affecting China right now. It's obviously been COVID, you know, the lockdowns. It's the 20th Party Congress. See there, right? See what I'm trying to do? And then also the Cold War.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of things going on in China. Very negative. I understand that. A lot of people looking to come out. Again, Southeast Asia is going to be a beneficiary.
Yeah.
But within that, I would say you disengage with China at your own risk. There's still a lot of great things going on. And again, all the government, I think, is already going to come out with some very interesting policies for next year that'll make it very attractive. Within China, what I would say is we think the biggest opportunity. So I don't think you should disengage with China, first. Second one is that within China, we think the best opportunity is in the Greater Bay Area.
Okay.
You know, so China went through phase one, which is Beijing. Gobi was very lucky. We caught phase two where they started developing Shanghai with the semiconductor industry.
Yeah.
We think now China's at its phase three, which is the Greater Bay Area. I don't know if you know what that is.
Yeah, San Francisco and the likes.
No. But in China.
So they're, sorry.
Yeah, no. So the Greater Bay Area
within China.
Not San Francisco. They want to create sort of a rival to the Greater Bay Area in San Francisco, but in China. And it's centered around Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, Macau, Dongguan, the 9+2. So 9 cities in the Pearl River Delta in Guangdong Province, plus Hong Kong and Macau. They're creating the world's first megalopolis.
Okay.
And that, for your listeners, viewers out there, look that word up. A super city, 80 million people with a GDP the same size as South Korea.
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about.
And about 4 hours away from KL.
Yeah, there you go, by flight, right? So this, I think, is one of the big, and again, it has been underreported. Very exciting. They're really creating this super economic zone where, you know, they're lowering tax rates. There's pension portability, right? You've got the financial center of Hong Kong together with the manufacturing hub of Shenzhen. So within China, I think that's exciting. Now, that's one area within China. The next big opportunity, right? Geographically, is Southeast Asia. You know, people ask me, I came out to KL, Ibrahim, you know that, 2015, and the old joke was, all my friends in China are like, why are you going to Southeast Asia? You know, China is so much bigger, there's no opportunities. And I was like, hey, look, it's just, you know, I got this gut feel, right? Came out here. Now everybody in China is looking to come to Southeast Asia. Everything's coming up Southeast Asia. And when you look at the global trends, US companies can't get into China, right? India attracting some attention. India's got its own set of challenges. US companies looking for growth, the demographics, come in to Southeast Asia. Chinese capital can't go to the US, can't go to India. Maybe not as welcome in Europe. South America is a bit far. Where are they gonna come? Southeast Asia. And within Southeast Asia, I think Malaysia is the most exciting.
Fantastic.
Most exciting,
very
right?
Very bullish, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we're hiring more. We're doubling down, like you said, on Malaysia. Because again, the world's attention within Southeast Asia, the most obvious destination is Indonesia. It's the biggest. I get that.
Yeah.
But it also leads to overvaluation and a little bit overhype. Malaysia, solid companies, and I hope we talk about some of them later. doing great things, regionalizing, and underappreciated.
Later would have to mean you coming over to the studio. Unfortunately, we've ran out of time.
Oh, there you
go. But I'm so happy to have you on again. The door's always open. And perhaps when, you know, there's more exciting announcements like Durio, for instance, please come over. That was our conversation with Thomas Zhao, the partner at Gobi Partners. If you've missed any part of this interesting interview, just head on to astroawan.com, look for Notepad, look for Gobi, that's G-O-B-I, named after the very famous desert. And of course, look for Thomas Zhao. He's a very famous guy. Harvard grad and all that. All right, take care. Until we catch you in the next one.